Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas. So let's get started.
KL7R, M0HBR. Hey, there you are. I got an alarm. I have the alarm set here, and I heard that the chimes come on, and I noticed that you had just logged on to Echolink, so that's why I say we're from London. We're monitoring your every keystroke there on the Mendenhall Glacier, Mike. How you been, KL7R, M0HBR?
Oh, I'm doing good. You sound like you're tired. Just got up. It's 7 o'clock over there in the morning. Must be a little pooped yet. I'm doing good. Bands have been awful, and so I've been experimenting. I built a trap for 160 meters. I built a coax trap out of RG-172. I wrapped 41 turns of RG-172, I think it's 172, 174, the small coax around a inch and a quarter PVC pipe, and hitched up the wire so that it was a series LC circuit, and so it acts like an open on 160 on 18.25, or 1.825. And kind of looking forward to talking to the guys here in about in a few minutes on 160, see if it works. Been doing some digital stuff again, Bill. You won't believe what I'm up to. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR, oh man. I'm going to have to brace myself here for the latest digital innovations there in Alaska. Yeah, I've been up a little while. I got a bit of a cold still, I think. It'll be a permanent condition here in wintertime London. Oh, fine on the coax trap. Yeah, I tried that without success when I was out in the Azores. I wanted to be able to use my... I think I wanted to use the 20-meter dipole on 17 meters. And I tried to make a trap, but it may have been the two bands were just too close. I was using RG-58, and I just couldn't get it to work right. And it seemed like if I just compressed the coil just a little bit, I'd get big variations in frequency. But if you're trying to block out 160 there, that might be easier to do with the RG-174. Yeah, I guess you're not worried about losses because you're just looking for an open there. I guess you wouldn't want to put too much power through there. But QRPers that we are, I guess you don't have to worry about that, Mike. I've been fooling around at lower frequencies also here. I have my HW8 hooked up to the gel cell battery and the window mounted Volkswagen solar panel array, and even in dark winter London, I get enough photons during the course of the day to keep the gel cell topped off, and I've got it fired up on 80 meter CW. I haven't worked anybody yet, I don't think. I may have worked one or two stations, but nothing, no real long rag chews. But it's kind of a hoot to think that it'll all be done with solar power. So tell me about the next, about the latest digital innovation, KL7R, M0HBR.
Oh, great on getting the HW8 wired up and working. That's pretty cool. I need to get a gel cell. I had a couple that were out of old emergency lights, but they were pulled out of the lights for a reason, and the sides were cracked and leaking. I don't know if they were overcharged or what. I'd throw them away. I'll get another one of these years, and I'm looking forward to. Never played with solar cells, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. Now this is more Christmas stuff. I finally got my wife's thing finished, and I was thinking about something I could do for Sean, and I built that lead clock, but I had these picks, and I was thinking, what can can I do with these? And my kid is an obsessive gamer. He collects games. So I made Pong out of a pick.
Pick Pong. Wow. That sounds like an entry for Hackaday, Mike. The Hackaday fellows would love that. You got to write that up. When you write it up, include a plug for solder smoke. I noticed that anything that we put on Hackaday really gets the hit count going. There's a lot of people watching that site. So wow, a pick. There you go. It's even got the snappy title, Pick Pong. What do you put it on the computer screen or what have you done for a monitor? Is it going to be able to play it on one of these little tiny screens and carry it around with them? Go ahead, Mike.
Oh no, and I can't really put it on Hackaday because the code was out there and available. There was code for PAL type televisions and NTSC televisions, and it was the old code, kind of poorly commented, and so I really can't put it on there as my thing. But I got it working anyway, and it required a 12 megahertz oscillator. So I spent some time figuring out how to get a 12 megahertz oscillator, and it turned out that I had a. I spent some time thinking, well, maybe I could take a 4 megahertz oscillator and make a tripler, and that'll make it 12, or maybe I could take a 1 megahertz oscillator and filter out just the 12 megahertz clock. And then I thought, well, maybe I can hack the code to where it would work at 20 megahertz, and that didn't work. And I thought, well, maybe I can use the SIGGEN from the DDS VFO to drive it, and that didn't have enough drive, so that didn't work. So then I did some looking around, and basically you can replace the crystals in a PIC oscillator with an inductor, a well-chosen inductor, and there's two shunt crystals, two shunt capacitors near the crystal, and basically you leave the two shunt capacitors alone, and you substitute the crystal for an inductor, and you get a LC oscillator. And so then I experimented around with LC oscillator, and I had this variable tap inductor. And so I switched it around. I have a switch on this variable tap toroidal inductor that I used as a variable inductor. And I switched it around until I got close to 12 megahertz, and then I padded it down with a trimmer cap. And sure enough, the screen came up. And then I hacked code a little bit, removed the copyright, and put my son's name in there. So I'm busily taking the lead of a 1K resistor and slapping it against the leads of some 100Ks to act as a joystick controller. There's RF involved. I had to create an oscillator. There's the output is actually a baseband video RF. And so I took a cable off my VCR to take baseband video input and convert that up to channel 4, and I hacked the code a little bit, and I got the thing up on 12 megahertz. Otherwise, it's the other guy's code there, 0HBR KL7R.
KL7R, Juno M0HBR London. Yeah, okay, well, very exciting. Yeah, you got some RF involved in that, great. I wonder if you thought about ceramic resonators. I think wonder if there's any ceramic resonators in that area. I've become a real ceramic resonator fan. And that leads me to mention one of the things I've been working on. Group of hams in the States came across one of my DSB, the double sideband pages on the web, and I've been communicating with them. They've got a group that is trying to put together their own double sideband rig for 75 meters. I think I just want to have a little local group using homebrew equipment. So I sent them the schematic for the NE602 based receiver that I'm using in the 20 meter rig. It actually prompted me to to scan my handwritten notes and put them on the website. It's vaguely reminiscent of JK1 OZL, although not as good as his, but it's got that hand, that homebrew handwritten kind of look. And I also told him about the ceramic resonator based, well, a ceramic resonator oscillator with the two resonators. It gives me about 60 kilohertz of variation. Yeah. So this has prompted me. I think this might be my over the Christmas vacation project, Mike. I want to actually go in and from the ground up kind of design my own amplifier chain to take the output of each ceramic oscillator up to about 1 watt. And I don't just want to copy somebody else's. I don't want to go to the W1FB book and just reproduce the broadband amplifier chain that he made. I want to do the math and pick the components and understand why each one goes like that and build it one stage at a time and get it up to about 1 watt. I think that might be how I'm going to torture myself over over Christmas. But, yeah, so I've also wanted to mention I've been inspired by the Discovery Channel. We recently got Discovery Real Time here. I don't know if you get this, but it's kind of a variation on the standard Discovery Channel, and it's guys building things, mostly. So at 8 o'clock at night here, there's a guy building boats, wooden boats, which is interesting. And then after that, there comes a guy who builds kit airplanes and helicopters. So I come home from work. I'm tired. I'm too tired to work in a shack, but with the kids sitting around, I turn this on, and we all watch the guy building helicopters, airplanes, and boats. And it's inspirational for the home brewer. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Well, cool, I'm a ceramic resonator, and that sounds like it'd be a rough project. It'd be interesting to hear how you approach it. If you're going to, it'd be interesting to hear how you approach, transistor biasing and everything. If you're going to use spice or if you're going to use other techniques. It's kind of interesting that the stuff I learned in school is now stuff I'm interested in. It's stuff I didn't quite get in school. I'm going to have to go back and see if I can regenerate and get now. There was a ceramic resonator. I use a ceramic resonator for the PIC oscillator. But I only had 4 megs and 20 megs and 10 megs, and I needed 12. I was close, but I couldn't quite get there. So I pulled out the ceramic resonator, and then I added the two shunt caps and crystal. And an inductor, and that's where I'm at. Fine on kit airplanes and everything. My friend of the family up there had a kit helicopter, and he's a different sort of man than I am, because he built on that helicopter. I think it was a Scorpion. He built on it for 25 years that I know of. He never finished it. I would have finished it in a few months. I've always kind of half been interested in building an ultralight, but I don't think that would fly by the House Finance Committee here. My dad was the pilot in the family, and really don't have the need to be a pilot. He managed to do a few things that I was with him when I was with him that probably cured me of the need to be a pilot. Anyway, M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. I think I know what you mean. I've done some dangerous things in airplanes and helicopters. Back in Army days, we won't go into that, Mike. But that kind of cured me of some of the desire to fly one of those things. But I watched this guy last night going through ground school and getting ready to take his initial lessons with the instructor, and some of that old feeling that I had as a 14-year-old kid reading Flying Magazine was coming back to me. But I have young children, so I try to limit the number of activities that could leave them without support. So I guess that's one of the reasons I moved away from tubes and ham radio. I just didn't feel like being fatigued and working on 700 volts. QRP, I guess you could do some damage, but you really got to try to zap yourself with 12 volts. you really got to want to and be good at it. But, yeah, I don't know. So maybe one of these days. I have a friend who I met by Echolink down in VK7 land, and he's got some ultralights, VK7 VKK, and he's had ultralights, and they look like great fun. God, but the idea that you could build something in your basement and then just fly it around, it's got to appeal to the home brewer and all of us. On the amplifiers, yeah, I guess that what I want to do is in this project I want to sit down and do the math and make a plan before I fire up the soldering iron. Until now, my pattern has been that the first step would be to heat up the soldering iron and start building and sort of design and hack away at it as I go. And I realize there are downsides to this approach. It's fun. But I think it might be better to actually do the design planning first before building. So I might do that. And in terms of the approach, I guess you just got to figure out how much gain you need to get from, you figure out how much power the little oscillator is putting out into, say, 50 ohms, and then figure out how much overall gain you need, figure out how much gain you want per stage, and you don't want to get too much for stability's sake. You got to decide whether you want broadband or tuned. If you go broadband, you got to have, you probably should have some feedback, and it complicates things a bit, I suppose. But tuned also has its complications. But anyway, then you just, I guess you design it up, you figure out the biasing, and then go stage by stage, of course, and see, get one working and go on to the next. Could be fun. It might be interesting to actually do the design of the amplifier yourself. For Spice, I don't know. I'm tempted to use Spice, or at least check my design thoughts with Spice. But I find that I spend almost as much time fooling around with Spice and trying to get it to work as I do with actually building the thing. It's actually easier just to build it and then go at it with a scope and a RF probe, as opposed to fooling around with the software. I find Spice quite it's user-friendly, but I find that, the breadboard and the Manhattan, a blank piece of PC board, a whole lot easier to deal with. So, I don't know. I think I might skip the spice stage there. KL7RM, 0HBR.
Yeah, Roger, Bill. Well, that's really what I was asking, is why a thing. I don't remember what I'd... the trouble is with college, a lot of times they teach you routines, and you don't understand the fundamentals of the routine. You're able to regenerate answers, that was one of the... Usually I understood things in college. I understood things in order to be able to do them. I had to understand them in order to be able to do them. But one of the things I didn't really understand was basic transistor biasing. I didn't understand exactly what I was doing when I was looking at a curve tracer with the steps, the current voltage step trace that you see for that you use for biasing, and I didn't really understand what that was telling me. I didn't understand how the curve was generated. I'm interested in building my own curve tracer, and in order to do that, I would have to understand what was going on a little better. That's one of the things that I have. I'd like to figure out one day is how to do biasing how it's useful and how to generate one. An interesting thing that I really don't understand well. I probably should, but I don't. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Well, Mike, you're not alone in that. I mean, I think that there's a lot of folks out there that don't understand it, and I guess I don't, of course, don't fully understand it, being a complete amateur at this. But, you know, I wanted to improve my understanding of how amplifiers operate. So over the last, I guess, year or so, every time we've taken a trip, I take with me a little spiral notebook, and either I started out with solid-state design and have since moved on to experimental methods in RF design. And I went through and I just wanted to try to understand the just the basic operations of Class A amplifiers and the parameters and what you have to do to get them to operate properly. And for me, it wasn't so much the bias that I had a tough time getting my head around. The biasing, it seemed pretty easy to me. I mean, I started out building Class C amps where you had essentially no bias on the base of the transistor. And so you'd get just the upper tips of the input waveform would cause the transistor to conduct. So you got this kind of Class C, you know, chop going through. And then you got the famous flywheel effect of the output network that kind of gave you the rest of the waveform. And then, you know, for Class A, you just obviously, it seemed to me it was pretty easy for me to understand how you just put an appropriate voltage on the base so that the thing would be, the transistor would be conducting all the time. And then you put the signal over that bias. What I had a tough time getting an understanding of was the role of the load, you know, the load, the output load, and how that determined the maximum output that you could get from the transistor amplifier stage. And I was always a bit disappointed because in a lot of the ARRL books, they just give you a formula and say, oh, well, power output is determined by the load, and here's the formula, and that's it. But they didn't really explain why it was that what you put on there as a load determined the maximum power output that you'd expect from one of these amplifiers. So I just sat down there with a notebook. It was usually when we went to the Dominican Republic, because when we go to the Dominican Republic to visit my wife's family, I have a lot of, I guess, a lot of downtime because they're all going off and visiting relatives and showing off their grandkids and everything else, and I'm left back at the house. And I'll just sit there with the notebook and the calculator and the experimental methods and go through it and try to understand, really understand what's going on. And I think I finally got there, but it took a while. But I know what you mean about the difficulty of understanding it. I don't want to get I probably shouldn't get too fancy, so I'll probably keep it real simple. And just start out trying to get the ceramic. I've already built the ceramic resonator oscillator for 20 meters. And I might just do this for experimental purposes, see if I can get it to produce a clean and stable 1 watt output. And then after I get that going, and then I might start fooling around with balanced modulators and turn it into a DSB rig. And then off we go. But I think this stage, I want to discipline myself and start out with pad and paper. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, Roger. If you do a Google search for curve tracer, about the fourth one down, the second one down is a Goatee transistor curve tracer. And that curve tracer, like the third image, or actually the first image and the third image, look very much like curve tracers we used in school. And, given, you're supposed to basically, given this curve tracer with its steps, you're supposed to be able to design the bias of a transistor based on the actual transistor. transistor, you know, current versus versus voltage, and you select the bias. And I don't remember what we did there, and I'd like to do that again. Farther on down is another one called the transistor curve tracer, and that one looks like it has information I need here. Basically, it's I guess it's for determining current gain. It determines the current gain of the transistor. I guess now you can just plop it in a voltmeter that says tell me the beta of the transistor. But anyway, that's how we did it when I was in school, and I want to understand that again one year. I don't know if that makes sense to you, what I just said there, Bill. M0 HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0 HBR. Sort of, I guess. But I think with the solid-state design and experimental methods, they start out with just some basic formulas, and then they at several points they do sort of take you through the approach that they use step by step, and it's very educational because it takes a lot of the mystery, you know, the questions about how did they come up with this component and why this value with a resistor, and all those kind of things. It takes the mystery out of it, but I really think you have to do it to fully understand it. So that's probably what I'm shooting for with this exercise. Of course, it's hard to do because your first instinct is to run over to the bench and start pulling out transistors and soldering pads onto boards and going at it with the oscilloscope and seeing what's happening. But again, I want to try to do it the right way this time. Hopefully, this will improve my approach to home brewing. I'll take a look at that curve tracer that you mentioned. See if I can take a look at that. See how that might fit in. Let's see. A couple other things I wanted to mention. I was trying to make a video of a little project. I don't know if you ever saw my trivial electric motor. It's a little motor made out of just a 9-volt battery, a kind of a refrigerator bar magnet, and a coil made out of enameled wire, and you can make it spin around and turn a propeller, and it's really kind of neat. A guy in Australia told me about it, and I built my own. And then I used the little video camera here just to shoot a 30-second video of how the thing works. It was kind of fun. Even with the maximum frame rate on the video camera, it wasn't capturing all the turns. So actually, the thing would be spinning away really furiously, and many turns per second. And if you looked at it on the video, it looked like it was just very slowly moving around. So, but the audio, you'd hear the thing clicking away. There was nothing I could do about that. But then I had trouble. I couldn't figure out how to upload or attach a video file, an AVI file, to a web page and get it to work right. So I struggled with that for a while, but then I just quit. One of these days I'll figure that out. I'm not very good with HTML. I use this really basic freeware program called Mozilla, and Mozilla might not be too good at uploading AVI files. I don't know. But that's been my latest not really digital adventures, but I guess web adventures. Mike, KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, Roger, Bill, M0HBR, KL7R. Well, Mozilla is actually an awesome awesome browser. If you're using it to upload, make sure you're doing a binary upload to your web server. If you try to upload an image or a file like the AVI, which is basically a binary file and not a text file, as a ASCII or text file, it will not work when it gets there. So make sure you upload binary. I don't know if you can do that using Mozilla or Firefox. I don't use my browser to upload. I use a regular FTP a, you know, if you're looking at a Zener, or a draws a Z on your oscilloscope in XY. If you're looking at a diode, it draws an L. If you're looking at a resistor, it draws a slanted line. If you're looking at a capacitor, depending on the size of the capacitor, it'll draw a circle or an ellipse, and the same with an inductor. But the curve tracers we used in school focused on a small segment of the curve. It drew a different curve. It drew a series of arcs, and based on the series of arcs, you could draw a load line, and from the load line, you could determine the beta, and then that showed you the current gain of the transistor. I guess that's not necessary to do now, and basically all transistors are pretty well marked. If you get a 2N2222, you know your gain's going to be, you know, somewhere around 200. Then my voltmeter here got a transistor hole. You put the transistor in, and it tells you the current gain. So maybe having a curve tracer isn't necessary anymore. But I assumed that was part of the bias. I think that's what it is. Maybe the curve tracer determined the beta, and from the beta, you could determine the biasing. I bet you that's all it was. I think it's coming back to me now.
KL7R, M0HPR, yeah, something like that. But I'm looking through my notebook, and they've got they essentially do the same thing, but it's formula based, and you determine the transconductance, and they give you the transconductance formula, and then you get the voltage gain, and you got to figure out how much idle current you want through the thing. You know, that's largely determined by the emitter resistor, and I'm just flipping through my notebook here, and I could see where I understand this, I don't understand this, and I get to a point where they have the curves, the characteristic curves of the transistor, and you can see how your signal is going to affect the collector voltage and the collector current, and you want to obviously prevent both of those from going to zero to keep it linear. And it's an interesting topic, and I'll keep you posted on the progress of my design efforts here. I guess we should do QRP news for this episode. And by the way, Mike, I'm recording. I'm going to try to do my digital duty and upload this version. Work requirements have slacked off a bit, so I'll try over the next week or so to edit this thing and send it out to the iPod universe. But a couple of QRP news developments here from London. I think you've seen the discussion of the super drug radios. Some guys here have discovered a very cheap. There's Maria. My daughter Maria has just walked in. Her first appearance on Solder Smoke. Stand by. There we go. Ow. Anyway, Maria has now joined us in the shack. 5-year-old Maria. Mike says hello. Anyway, the Super Drug Radio, for a ridiculous price, I think it's like $5. It was someone this cheapo IC-based radio with shortwave capability. And then the guys at GQRP Club have been hacking away at it with great gusto and turning it into frequency counters and all kinds of things and shortwave receivers and adding BFOs. Great stuff. I actually found myself standing in front of a Super Drug store here in West London last weekend. I couldn't resist. I told my wife, I said, stand by, I have to go in there and see if I can buy a Super Drug radio, but my branch didn't have any, so no joy there. Probably just as well, because it's not my kind of project. I think we talked about it a little bit more. A little bit too black box and too IC for me. And the other thing is I was just surfing the hackaday hacker portion of the internet, and I discovered that some of the hackers, you know, the hardware hackers in the good sense of the word, have discovered Altoid tins, and they're building all kinds of things for them for use with iPods, building little power supplies and all kinds of iPod accessories inside Altoid tins. So it's no longer just us nutty QRPers who are using the Altoid tins. Like it's now reached the iPod universe. Let me see. Marie, you going to say hello? No, she's mic shy. KL7RM0HBR.
Oh, excellent, Bill. Yeah, I can see you there vacillating in front of the store there. I got to get me a $5 radio. Well, hello, Maria. I've never met you before. My name's Mike, and I'm located in Alaska. And I talk with your dad pretty often in the mornings on the weekends. So hello to you, and I hope you have a happy Christmas. Hey, Bill, I think since your daughter's there, I'll say 73 to you. I'm glad your hard week or a couple of weeks or however long it was has settled down, and maybe you can enjoy some of the holidays there. I imagine pretty stressful for you. 73, Bill. I'll catch you next time. M0HBR. I enjoyed it this time. KL7R.
Okay, Mike. Real good. Yeah, we covered a lot of territory here. Very interesting as always, and I'll try to get it all formatted and out on the web. Have a good weekend. Maybe we'll talk during the weekend. If not, maybe next one we'll have another episode of Solder Smoke. Yeah, and we'll say hi to anybody listening out there on the iPods, wherever you may be. And please send us some feedback. Send an email to n2cqr@arrl.net. Let us know that you're listening. 73 Mike, thanks a lot. KL7R, Juno, M0HBR, London, 73.
All right, good night from Juno.